It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
As the fight over the president's border policy continues, crews outside San Diego just completed a 14-mile steel fence and started a second one, stretching from the mountains to the ocean.
This last year, we've seen about a 700% increase in families and a significant increase in unaccompanied minors here in just San Diego.
This weekend, 52 migrants rushed through a hole in the old fence. They tried to evade agents, then claimed asylum when caught. Unlike Mexicans, who are quickly deported, Central Americans take hours to process to verify country of origin, travel documents, medical condition, and available bed space.
Between 25 up to 40% of the agents are assigned non-patrol duties today, processing, transport, or care and feeding of the family units.
We are seeing increasing medical problems as they come across the border.
Smugglers also use children as decoys, dropping off this 6- and 9-year-old over a fence while 10 migrants cross illegally only a mile away.
We have to identify and then go apprehend every single person that crosses the border, whether they're claiming asylum, whether they're smuggling narcotics, or whether they're involved in human trafficking.
In a recent 73-day period, DHS released 84,000 immigrant families back into the United States. In San Diego, nonprofits opened their own shelter to help ICE handle the overflow.
It has been a nonstop flow of people from anywhere from 50 to 140 people a day.
The border fence stretched more than 650 miles when the president took office. He's replaced about 140 miles with this new style fence, but wants at least 200 miles more, either from the Defense Department or the 2020 budget.
Sandy Rios with you. That was William LaJeunesse last night on Fox News telling us how bad it is, which makes it even more stunning to me that 12 Republican senators voted against the president being able to declare a national emergency on the border. And I'm going to mention their names again today because I want you to know what your senators have done. And before I do that, I want to bring you some information that Kristen Nielsen brought just recently in an interaction. She said the department is on track to interdict 100,000 migrants crossing the U.S. border with Mexico just in the month of March. She said, there is no manufactured crisis on our southern border. There is a real-life humanitarian and security catastrophe. By the way, the DHS was apprehending prior to this month an average of 50 to 60,000 migrants per month. And, of course, what's happening is that, generally speaking, in the earlier 2000s, most of the people that were coming from Mexico were single men. And they were easily deported. But now the immigrants have figured out that if they include children, and they are not necessarily their children, sometimes these children are passed from group to group so that they can appear as a quote-unquote family, which is, of course, how the press describes who's coming over. So the flow of families, says Kirsten Nielsen, has become a flood, and we have virtually no hope of removing them in the future, despite the fact that the vast majority who apply for asylum today do not qualify for it under our laws. So that's just a tiny bit of what Kirsten Nielsen said. She's the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. And that, again, could I just say that on the backdrop of that, 12 Republican senators, and there would be more, if Cory Gardner and Martha McSally and I think Tom Tillis, yes, in North Carolina, were not up for reelection, trust me, there would have been 15 senators voting against the president. Why do I say that? Because Tom Tillison, for one, announced right up front that he was against the president's emergency act, but then he ended up voting to support the president because, you know, he's running for reelection and he wants you people in North Carolina to think that he maybe agrees with you that we need to stop this, but he doesn't, just to be clear. And neither does Lamar Alexander or Roy Blunt or Susan Collins, Mike Lee, Jerry Moran, Lisa Murkowski, Rand Paul, Rob Portman, Ohio, Mitt Romney, Utah, Marco Rubio, Florida, and Pat Toomey, Pennsylvania, and Roger Wicker of Mississippi. All of them voting to stop the president from declaring a national emergency and protecting our borders. I can't think of a single reason. I'm even running out of excuses to make for Mike Lee and Rand Paul. Why this has become an object of their fixation and when they do nothing else is beyond me, because I have some other news this morning that just piques me. I have to say, I just got this in my inbox as I was going on the air, and I want to read this. This is from Dan Horowitz. It says, three of the MS-13 members who stabbed and burned a Maryland victim were resettled as refugees. This happened in Prince George's County. I don't even think I told you this particular story, but these guys, MS-13 gang members, stabbed their victim 100 times and then set his body on fire. And so they're all involved in Latin American gangs. This is in Maryland. This is in one of the most affluent counties of Virginia, where one of them lives. Not that that matters. It just shows you how deeply embedded in the country. They're not staying on the border. This is a problem for every single state. And so now we know that those three that have been, at least three of those members of the MS-13 gang were resettled here as refugees. So we have a problem. We have a very serious problem. Another story coming out of California. There was a family on their way home from Disneyland. Their little six-year-old boy was in the back seat of the car when an illegal immigrant, Constantino Banda Acosta, 38, ran a stop sign, ran into the back of their car, the seat behind the driver's seat, ran into their little boy, and now he is seriously injured. He is unconscious. He was found unconscious, not breathing. He is still in the hospital with a severe. We don't know what the outcome is going to be. There are pictures in this article. We don't know if he'll recover or not. But they're doing everything that they can. And now we find out that this particular Banda Acosta is a Mexican national. He's here illegally. He's been deported at least 15 times. 15 times since 2002. And nobody cares. Those 12 senators don't give a rap. They don't care. They don't care. I am infuriated. I really am. I am just furious. And I hope you feel the same way I do. I feel like we need to have a march on the Senate and just root them out. I don't know. I'm not saying violence. I'm talking about just shame them and certainly don't reelect them. Honestly, what excuse can you make for your senator? He held your baby? You know, you've had coffee with him? And he's done a few things right? What could be more important than protecting this country? Honestly, how many more murders have to take place? How many more rapes? How many more drugs have to come over the border before they finally decide maybe we shouldn't be concentrating so much on constitutional purity in this moment? When we know what the president did was legal because Congress passed an act that made it legal. So maybe we could, you know, fix that later, because we can't really fix it now anyway because we don't have the House. But no. They're high-minded, you see. They're high-minded when it comes to that. Not so high-minded about saving American lives, jobs, safety for our women and children. Not so much about that. No, because they don't feel the danger, you see, because a lot of them are just pretty secure behind their own gates. So that brings us to the Supreme Court, which actually made a good decision, and that's the good news of this. Of course, the Supreme Court is deeply divided, we know, and we're learning. I don't think we can actually be pretty confident that we're going to get good votes out of the concurrent configuration. I'm not sure. John Roberts is... I don't know. He's become the new Kennedy, and that's not a compliment. And we're not sure about Justice Kavanaugh yet either. Honestly, he's done some good things and some bad things. I don't understand that. But back to this. The ACLU, by the way, had argued that federal law imposes a strict limit on when government officials can detain aliens for deportation after they are released from jail. And in a 5-4 decision, The 5-justice majority said that aliens facing deportation may be held in immigration jails without bond hearings in February 2018. So here's what's happening. Non-citizens were put in jail for various crimes. And in sanctuary states or cities, the authorities were not letting ICE know when these criminals were going to be released. And some, I don't know if it was a law or a statute, was put into place that said that they had to be arrested and detained by ICE within 24 hours of their release. But ICE didn't know when they were released because, you see, the local authorities were not telling them. And so they were released out into the public. And that's just fine with the ACLU. I guess it's just fine with those 12 senators, too. Republican senators. All the Democrats, by the way, voted, you know, against your safety and for illegal immigrants and all their rights, even if they're criminals. They all voted that way, including 12 Republicans and 3 more would have. Tillis, McSally, and who else did I say? Cory Gardner from Colorado. Real champions. I don't know how we got ourselves into this mess, but we did. And we are not going to stop fighting. And so the Supreme Court ruled in favor of us being able to sort of, you know, detain these criminals, pick them up and deport them. What a horrible thing that we should allow our government to do. But the Supreme Court made the right decision, which is why now the left is, you know, making all these noises about the Supreme Court. I'm not saying that one decision. I'm just talking about that's an example of the power the Supreme Court has. Let's listen to what some of the candidates think about the Supreme Court. This is clip 13.
What if there were 5 justices selected by Democrats, 5 justices selected by Republicans, and those 10 then pick 5 more justices independent of those who chose the first 10? I think that's an idea that we should explore.
It's not just about throwing more justices on the court. What I think we need to do is some kind of structural reform that makes the court less political.
If they can't catch up through the ballot box by winning an election, they want to try doing it in a different way. Now, we would have no interest in that whatsoever. It'll never happen. It won't happen. I guarantee you, it won't happen for 6 years.
Yeah, well, there's more to say about that. But of course, the left is on the march to transform our governance, our system, whether it's the Supreme Court, where they want to add more justices. And President Trump is exactly right. They want to dilute the court. They're afraid that President Trump is going to appoint another conservative justice, and he will. And they will have a heart attack because the Supreme Court makes so many important decisions, and they might not get all the abortions. They might not get all of that, you know, letting a baby die after it's born alive business. I mean, that would be so heartbreaking, wouldn't it? If the Supreme Court should rule in favor of life again, how horrific. After the old Supreme Court in 1973 gave us Roe versus Wade and forced upon this country something the citizenry didn't even want. The trouble started a long time ago, but now the left wants to fix it by adding more judges. And, of course, they make it sound high-minded. Yes, that was Beto O'Rourke. We've got this plan. Don't think he thought of this. I can tell you that between adding Supreme Court justices, between doing away with the Electoral College, between the whole deconstruction and reconfiguration of our voting laws, which Nancy Pelosi's introducing, plus all of the introduction of punishment by law if you don't affirm LGBT rights, pronouns, names, all of these things have been in the works. They've been thought about long, deep, and hard. The things that Ocasio-Cortez is bringing up, the new Green Deal. You think she made that up? No. I'm telling you, she did not. The progressive left, the nightmare of a left, has been working on these things for a long time. And by the way, could I just say that little cute Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been at the center of a lot of this. You may not know that, you know, she wants to do away with the American Constitution. She's been very clear about that for a long time, but nobody's mentioned it because she's just so cute. You know, she's just so cute, and they made movies about her and stuff, so nobody ever talks about the fact that she wants to do away with the American Constitution. She is a ruthless leftist, and she is holds the legacy and is the precursor to what's coming. The nightmare that will be ours if we don't fight back, led by people like, oh my goodness, Ocasio-Cortez. All right, there's a lot to say today. A lot. And I'm going to try to get in as much as I possibly can, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, healthcare, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your health care. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year, a month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for President Trump, who's visiting the Lima Army Tank Plant in Ohio to discuss national defense. The plant has been supporting the U.S. military since 1942, building and storing combat tanks. Psalm 29:11 reminds us of God's gifts of strength and peace. The Lord gives strength to His people. The Lord blesses His people with peace. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to lift up our President and Commander-in-Chief as he leads our country to peace and prosperity. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
When social media is unsociable, that story next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
President Trump said what we all sort of knew the other day, accusing Facebook and Twitter and Google of colluding against conservatives.
Something's happening with those groups of folks that are running Facebook and Google and Twitter. And I do think we have to get to the bottom of it. It's very fair. It's collusive.
The president's remarks in the Rose Garden came one day after the White House social media director was temporarily blocked on Facebook. Dr. Michael Brown, a well-known Christian academic, was banned by YouTube for videos they considered to be anti-gay. The decision made not by algorithms, but by a Google vice president. Same thing happened with Alliance Defending Freedom, the religious liberty law firm, proving that when it comes to conservatives and Christians, social media is not all that social. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Get rid of the Electoral College.
The popular vote has been diminished in terms of making the final decision about who's the president of the United States, and we need to deal with that.
We've got to make some kind of structural reform to depoliticize the Supreme Court.
Term limits for Supreme Court justices might be one thing.
I'm open to the idea of a younger voting age.
So those are just some of the great ideas from the current presidential candidates for the Democrats. It's not their ideas. Trust me, I'm telling you, the backroom doors and like the Center for American Progress, John Podesta's organization has been grinding away at these little policies for a long time. And like I told you, the left, they're in it for the long haul. They call it the long game, the march through the institutions. That's their plan, and they've been making them. But, you know, here's the thing. Don't be discouraged, because I always say when I start, you know, lots of my friends who you hear on this show, we talk about sort of the despair that comes from talking about all the planning and the successes of the left. And we rue the fact that conservatives and Christians don't have plans like this. we sort of get caught off guard. We really are sheep among wolves. We are. But I always say the thing of it is, just to make a distinction, the reason the left plans so meticulously is because they believe this is all there is. This life, the 80 years they have here, that's it. That's it. After that, I guess they just believe it's a totally, you're gone. You're dead. There's nothing. But Christians don't believe that, and neither do Jews. We believe that there is an eternity, and we believe there's a God. So it changes how we view all of life. We don't feel the need to control every dot, jot, and tittle, as the King James Version says of the Bible. We don't feel compelled to control every moment, to be fearful out of our minds over our death. We are confident as we look forward to eternity. We are not worried. We make, we enjoy our families. We are worried about other things. We try to take care and do the right things, but we're not worried about controlling all of society because we know that we're not going to make the world better, but we need to make ourselves better and pass on to our children those kinds of values and the knowledge of God. So we fill our times with other things. So that makes us really weak when we go up against a group of people who think this is all there is. They're in it to win. They're going to all. It's all about the struggle. Every moment has to count. They don't look forward to the things we look forward to, and so they don't have other lives like that. They do some. I'm making a broad generalization, but for the most part, trust me, the hard leftists don't. This is their life, and so it makes us weak going up against them. But I always say, and will repeat to you, what we have, those of us who know the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, we have power beyond imagining. We have the Holy Spirit who raised Christ Jesus. Paul said he dwells within us. We have that power. I always make light of it. Don't be offended, but I do, because I don't think God minds me saying this. I say he's our secret sauce. We don't have all the planning and scheming, but God, through the power of his Holy Spirit, is the secret sauce. And we know that even Benjamin Franklin said the more he lived, the longer he lived, he believed that God dwells in the affairs of men. And that's the basis upon which he insisted there be prayer in the Congress. Benjamin Franklin, did you know that? Okay, I'm rambling because I actually want to talk about other things, but I just wanted to lay the groundwork for this. So these planners, this is what they have in mind for us. They want to do away with the Electoral College. And basically, without going into great length about this, the Electoral College may seem unfair to you, because it means that populated states like California, I think five times, well, let's just put it this way, they have a lot more votes than Rhode Island. They have a lot more votes. California has a lot more votes than Ohio. California, New York, they're saturated with people, and they're centered in those cities, Chicago the same way. And if you did a direct Democratic vote where you just count votes, it would mean that Rhode Island, Iowa, Nebraska, you know, you fill in the blanks. You wouldn't matter at all. You wouldn't, your thoughts, the middle part of the country, let's put it this way, would have no say. It would be the West and the East Coast who would decide all the elections. And the founding fathers knew that. And so they set this, they did that in the, you know, in the representative body. They have a Senate that every state, no matter how big, has two senators. And then the House is your allotted members based on your population. So they covered both issues. The House was a bigger, a larger body, the Senate smaller, and they were supposed to be a check and a balance for each other. So they did the same thing with the election process. The Electoral College gives a certain amount of electors to the states, and they vote separately from the populace. Now, sometimes the electors cast their votes based on, some states are moving toward having the electors cast their vote for the candidate that gets the most popular votes. But that still goes against what the founders had in mind, which was this balance again, where if we go to a pure democracy, which is absolutely not what they wanted, they were very clear about that. They called it mob rule, but that's what the left is pushing for. It would mean that California and New York and Chicago would decide who our presidents were. And the rest of you in those other states, you'd have nothing to say about it. Candidates wouldn't come to your state. Your vote wouldn't count. And that's why the Electoral College. So they're pushing against that, and that, you know why. Do I need to explain why? Of course we know why. They want people to live in cities. They have a whole plan for that, too. They want people to get out of the rural country areas. You can be controlled better in city-populated, highly populated areas. It's just, it's amazing the depth to which they've thought through everything. I can tell you, every time I go into a certain bit of subject matter and I hear from experts, I see the hand of the left planning, 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 playing the long game, the march through the institutions, including the church, and we've touched on that one, too. All right, so their latest then idea, well, one of their many ideas is, of course, to raise the voting age to 16. You've heard Nancy Pelosi talk about what a great idea that is. She's always wanted 16-year-olds to vote, and she has a very, actually, I wish I could play, I should play her clip. Let's go to Nancy Pelosi, clip 8, and people can actually hear her make her case for why 16-year-olds should vote.
We're obviously collecting thoughts about it. In other words, just because somebody has a good idea, for example, any one of us, doesn't mean it's going to the floor next. It means you go through the process, you build consensus, you build a crescendo. That's another club I'm starting, the Crescendo Club. You build a crescendo. You have an idea? Let's see how many people you can convince. Let's see what the other views are that we can enhance this. And here's what I think. When kids are in high school, it's really a prime time for them to be aware of civics. Many years ago, when I was in school, civics was a requirement. Then, remember that? Well, you don't remember, but you've read about it. But then it became an elective, and so, there were other things kids took instead. So the point is that when they're in high school, we see such a heightened interest in history and civics and climate and gun safety and you name it. And that would be a time for them to be registered to vote. Now, we want to start something that might say register to register. But you've got to get them on there, because once they leave high school, not all kids go to college. And even if they do, might not be in that same sense of community that they, as high school students, can make a big difference. More and more. More and more.
Okay, I want to interrupt her. All right, so I'm sorry I'm laughing. Listen, I think Nancy Pelosi is smart as a whip. I don't think she's dumb. I know people like to make fun of her. She's not dumb. She's very smart. And what she said, up until the end when she really tipped her hat as to what she's really saying, I agree with her completely. Kids should be steeped in civics. They should be experimenting. Remember the weekly reader, those of you that are old enough to remember. We heard the news every week when I was in grade school. Every Friday we had the weekly reader. We studied the news and current events. And when we got in high school, I remember, that's when I got into student council and government and learning about all of that. And so, yeah, civics is kind of important. In eighth grade, you had to pass the constitutional test before you could even get into high school. You had to understand your government and learn the Constitution. But, not so much anymore. So what Nancy's saying is right. We should be concerning ourselves about that. But then she goes on to say, yes, because her reason is because, you see, when you're 16, you start thinking about gun safety and climate change, and then you're ripe, and we can get you then, and you ought to register to vote. And once you leave high school, we lose control. So we need to have them register to vote then, so that's her thought. But I want to give you a reason why that's not a good idea, and I want to do it in the form of a video, Prager University video. This is done by Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA, and he's talking about what happens when these 16-year-olds go off to college. He's not
year after 16. Year, Americans pour billions of dollars into colleges and universities. I'm not talking about the outrageous tuition costs, living expenses, and fees, the debt pit students fall into. And I'm not talking about the tax money, our money, colleges and universities get from federal and state governments. I'm talking about the money Americans are handing over to these institutions of their own free will. In 2017, that number was $44 billion. $44 billion in donations in 1 year from alumni and other donors. And for what? To enhance the education of America's youth? Do you really think our college graduates are better educated, more literate, more versed in classical philosophy and American history than they were 10, 20, or 50 years ago? If your child goes to college and spends 4 years partying, skipping class, and playing video games, consider yourself lucky. It's when they actually listen to their radical professors that you're in trouble. So, what have our institutions been doing with all this money? Well, the University of Michigan's Vice Provost of Equity and Inclusion makes $400,000 a year. The university spends close to $11 million annually on diversity and inclusion staff and programs, according to a recent report. What do you think Vice Provosts of Equity and Inclusion, and almost all schools have one now, do all day? They, and the small armies they supervise, spend all day, every day, looking for racism, sexism, classism, Islamophobia, homophobia, transphobia, and any other phobias they can dream up. If they don't find some bias somewhere, they're out of a job. So guess what? They find it, even where it doesn't exist.
Okay, Charlie Kirk, that's a PragerU video, and the reason I'm playing that is because this is what happens to our kids. It starts, actually, in high school now. It starts in grade school, actually, now. Ask those of Virginia whose kids were forced to march. I forgot exactly what the topic was. It was recent. They were forced and shamed by their high school teachers if they didn't participate in this protest. But Charlie goes on to talk about what's happening in colleges and universities. Let's listen.
The University of California at Santa Cruz now has an, quote, activist in residence. His job is to mint new leftist activists, as if we have a shortage. Why are we voluntarily giving billions and billions of dollars to hopelessly corrupt institutions that overcharge, underdeliver, and undermine the most basic values of Western civilization? We should be starving this beast. Instead, we're feeding it. Are there exceptions to this rule? Colleges that are actually dedicated to the pursuit of knowledge and wisdom? Of course there are, and they are worthy of your financial support, but you can count them on two hands. The rest have a different mission, and they have more than enough coin to carry it out. The aforementioned University of Michigan has an endowment of $12 billion, but that's small potatoes compared to Yale's $30 billion or Harvard's $40 billion, and donors keep giving them more. It's time to stop. You'd be better throwing your money into a bonfire. That's just a waste. But when you donate to your average university, you're actually hurting your society. You're the reason kids, maybe your kids, are coming home, loving socialism and hating free market capitalism, believing male and female don't objectively exist, excusing rockets being shot into Israel, then blaming Israel for defending itself, romanticizing Che Guevara and reviling George Washington, and dismissing America, arguably the most decent country ever created, as racist, genocidal, imperialist, white supremacist, hate-filled, and misogynistic.
Okay, that's part two of that. I'm going to play the rest of it in just a second, but I really would ask those of you who are parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles to stop and soberly consider what Charlie's saying there. Because I see this happening all the time. Parents are so happy that their kids are getting into colleges and universities. They have blinded themselves to what they're sending their kids into. And then their kids are coming back home radically transformed and without a relationship with their parents, hostile to the things they were raised to believe, which in many cases is the truth. I mean, you don't want to just do what your parents did for no reason. But when you have been raised centered around truth about human nature and about who God is and about common sense and reality, then when you go off that reservation and you come back and you view your parents as the enemy, your grandparents as the enemy, and you're hostile and angry and you can't have family meals and they can't... Well, that is because we have not been guarding our children. We have turned them over to public education, not only grade schools and high schools, but also now universities. Did you hear him say $44 billion colleges and universities nationwide received just last year? We're going to come back with the rest of that in just a second, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
They not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Newly elected Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has repeatedly uttered anti-Semitic tropes. The House of Representatives initially considered condemning her anti-Semitism publicly, but ended up passing a worthless, broad rebuke of hatred in all forms that failed to mention Omar by name. During the Obama presidency, the talking snake media protected him from rightly being described as a Marxist by cloaking him in the protective shield of racism. Today, the media is doing the same thing for Omar, protecting her from rightly being described as an anti-Semite by cloaking her in the Islamophobia shield.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is a unique moment in the history of our country where we have an opportunity to restore the foundations of this nation.
Tony Perkins of Washington Watch.
To a nation that once again honors God. It will not happen unless God's people are informed and engaged.
Join Tony Perkins for Washington Watch. Weekday afternoons at 4 Central and Saturday evening at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The American Psychological Association says that biblical masculinity is a form of mental illness. The APA has issued a set of guidelines based on the premise that traditional masculinity is harmful. By traditional masculinity, they mean qualities such as stoicism, the ability to face adversity without collapsing, competitiveness, which is one of the main drivers of career success, dominance and aggression, which are traits that enabled American men to achieve independence, free the slaves, and turn back the Nazi menace. The APA is part of the dark crusade to utterly feminize men. But as I explain in my book for fathers, The Boy to Man book, biblical masculinity means using masculine strength to stand for the truth, protect the weak, and to provide for and lead our families. Maybe it's the people who think this is toxic who are the ones with a mental disorder.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Following a meeting of the so-called two Trumps, the American one and the Trump of the tropics, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, a potentially transformational partnership was announced. President Trump declared that Brazil is now a major non-NATO ally. He even suggested it may become a NATO one. This strategic alliance and the election of the conservative Bolsonaro that made it possible may be the most strategic development in the Western Hemisphere since Fidel Castro's revolution ushered in 5 decades of leftist violence and oppression in much of the region. But for this partnership's promise to be actualized, it must engineer a hemispheric intervention to end the humanitarian crisis in Venezuela. Before millions more Venezuelans flee their country or die there en masse, concerted regional action is needed to cut off the foreign-supplied financial and security life support that sustains the Maduro regime. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Your children are being fed a steady diet of this nihilism in grade school, middle school, and high school. But they have to come home for dinner every night. College is where the leftist deal is sealed. They're free of your influence and under the sway of their leftist professors and leftist peers. Stop supporting institutions that don't support your values, that, in fact, despise your values. And believe me, they despise you when your back is turned. The only thing they love about you is your money. Oh, you might say, I would never give money for all that diversity, equity, and inclusion nonsense. I designate my donations to the business school or the medical center. If you think that, you're fooling yourself. Money is fungible. You can designate it for anything you want, but you can't control what the university does with it. I travel around the country every week trying to rescue kids from the leftist cult that is college. It's bad enough that I have to battle administrators, professors, and leftist student body. I shouldn't have to fight you, too. College has become a big business. Most indoctrinate rather than educate. The best way to force them to change is to take away their cash. Your cash. Start today. I'm Charlie Kirk.
That was Charlie Kirk. Yeah, the Turning Point New USA. And that's a Prager video, which is excellent. You can hear. So we're going to put it on our Facebook page so that you can share it and think about it. You know, there are colleges and universities you can trust still, but they may not be the ones you think you can trust. It's like shifting ground, shifting sand. Colleges, Christian colleges, have really morphed into something I hardly recognize. Not all of them, but many of them. Many of our stalwarts. And so be diligent. Don't just be excited that your kid gets an application to a school. Make sure that you find out what they're teaching and what they allow and what they're championing. I mean, there are schools that really champion the truth now, and they need to be supported. And I will predict this. This is, I know, discouraging, but I just want to prepare you that I think that your children and mine, and I'm talking to those people that are serious Christians, as David Horowitz would say, Orthodox, or what did he say? Religious Christians. I love that term. It's a Jewish term for other Jews, religious Jews. Well, we are religious Christians. Your children probably will not be able to get into colleges and universities that they can get into now, unless they have the right thinking about things. That's been coming for a very long time. George Herbert Walker Bush was a champion of that way of thinking, Goals 2000, that we have to teach outcome-based education. Teach our kids, you know, not so much, you know, the academics, but teach them what to think about things, the outcome. We want the right outcome. We want them thinking the right things about things, you see. So there'll be tests. There already are. Look at the essays and all of that. They're preparing the groundwork for weeding out icky people like religious Christians and others that don't have the right thinking. So that is coming in the future, unless we can put our feet down now and make these colleges and universities. By the way, the president is working on a Higher Education Act, and we'll talk about that probably in an entire show soon. And we're hoping that the president will address this business of free speech and political correctness. That's too mild anymore, isn't it? It's like it's almost like fascism. It's like forcing your kids to think a certain way, or else there will be punishment if they don't shut up and not say anything that would offend their leftist college roommates and friends. This is the story out of Virginia that I was trying to recall. This is from Facebook. Our daughter, a senior at Langley High School in Fairfax County, Virginia, came home from school today with an interesting report. At the given time, her teacher announced it was time to walk out of school to show support for socialist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. Our daughter said she didn't want to participate. She reports that the teacher said she believed it was mandatory that everyone participate and demanded to know why she was refusing. Our daughter said because she didn't believe in the cause. The teacher reportedly informed our daughter that she was making a mistake and would have to suffer the consequences. So that was Fairfax, Virginia, and that is the county, by the way, that I was trying to think of the name earlier. It's the very wealthy county, Virginia, close to, of course, to D.C. That is where some of those MS-13 gang members that stabbed that boy in Maryland 100 times live, in Fairfax County. So just trying to make it practical for you so you can see how deeply embedded they are in the country and how serious the problems are and how far-reaching. I would like to, I kind of want to do a number of different stories right now, if I might. This is going to jump around a little bit because these are little pieces, dribs and drabs of things I've wanted to bring to your attention today, but they're not necessarily related. So we've got Beto O'Rourke running for president, and Beto presents well. He has that Q factor. You know, he's a musician. Do you know what that is? A Q factor is what makes you take notice of someone. Sometimes I think it's just innate. Some people enter a room and they speak and people pay attention. They listen. it really is not necessarily connected to the message or even the intelligence, or probably intelligence has to be there. But sometimes people will have a Q factor and they aren't necessarily that bright. But the Q factor is kind of a physical attribute. Maybe it's height, command of the language, it's a presentation. It's just something sometimes people have that others don't have. Others come, you know, walk in a mall and no one ever pays attention to them. The Q factor, it's what it is. So Beto has that Q factor. Musicians often, performers certainly have that Q factor. Beto has it. And he speaks well and he's nice, you know, he's friendly. But of course, we're learning more and more about him. We learned quite a bit about him when he was running for Senate against Ted Cruz in Texas. And he really narrowly lost when you think about the fact that it's Texas. But Beto now is running for president, but we, of course, are learning a lot more about him. We knew that he was drove away from a drunk driving accident and lied about it. We knew that about him, but they sort of downplayed that in his campaign. But now we're learning other things, and among them is this. This is from Reuters. It's unclear whether the United States is ready for a presidential contender who, as a teenager, stole long-distance phone service for his dial-up modem, wrote a murder fantasy in which the narrator drives over children on the street, and mused about a society without money. So those are some of the things he's written about. Here is this essay that he wrote. I don't know how old he was when he wrote this, but here it is. One day as I was driving home from work, I noticed two children crossing the street. They were happy. Happy to be free from their troubles. This happiness was mine by right. I had earned it in my dreams. As I neared the young ones, I put all my weight on my right foot, keeping the accelerator pedal on the floor until I heard the crashing of the two children on the hood, and then the sharp cry of pain from one of the two. I was so fascinated for a moment that when after I had stopped my vehicle, I just sat in a daze, sweet visions filling my head. Beto O'Rourke. And he was 26 when he hit that other vehicle while he was driving drunk, drove away, repeatedly lied about the incident while he was running for Texas for Senate. So, and then, of course, he's posting strange videos on his Twitter account. He filmed himself talking to the camera while operating the vehicle he was driving. Remember, he did one in the dentist office. These are odd things. I'm just saying, this is very strange behavior for a man who wants to be president, who seems to have so much support by a lot of our kids who graduated from those universities we just talked about in that Prager video. Changing the subject, let's move to Fox. One thing I noticed yesterday, any of you have the Fox News app? I do, because, of course, I use Fox so much. I used to be with Fox. I was a contributor for a long time. And Fox is an important part of my news gathering. Not entirely, obviously. You know, I use a ton of other sources, but really important. So I have the app on my phone. And yesterday, when I tried to access news, I kept getting a notice that says I should pull it up now so I could read it. But it says basically I can't get on unless I agree to a bunch of stuff. So I went to the contract and read that bunch of stuff, and I was alarmed. I was alarmed by all the things they're demanding access to if I simply, they want me to sign up, create a password. Then they want they want personal information. They want access to this, access to that. You know what? I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't care if it is Fox. I don't want to do that. And so coming on my experience yesterday, this came out in the LA Times, not in Fox, but in the LA Times. And this is what it says. Rupert Murdoch, he's the owner and founder of Fox, spun off various television assets, including the Fox News Channel and Fox Broadcast Network, to form a new company Tuesday, yesterday, when I was getting this message, known simply as Fox Corp. The freshly minted company unveiled its board members, including former House Speaker Paul Ryan. Former House Speaker Paul Ryan, they go on to say, will be overseeing Fox News Channel, which, of course, is many of our favorites and certainly Trump's favorite. And we all know that Paul Ryan does not consider President Donald Trump his favorite. And so now Paul Ryan is in this position. Now, he's not the single-handed overseer, but he's part of a very small board of directors. What a cushy job for him, and what an unfortunate thing for all the rest of us. You know, we already know that they've suspended Judge Jeanine. We know that Tucker Carlson has come under fire, and we wish they would do more to help him. And so we're seeing a shakeup. Now, the at least for a while, Rupert Murdoch will be on this board, along with his eldest son, Lachlan, and a few other people whose names I won't mention because it would take too long, and you don't know who they are, probably. But it is now a standalone company with publicly traded shares. So I'm concerned about that. I'm very concerned about that. I have nothing more to say about it because I don't know any more than I just shared with you. But as I find things out, I'll let you know. If we lose Fox as an outlet for conservative thought, you know, it will be a gut punch. Now, there are other outlets who've been trying to step into the breach. Mark Levin and Mark Levin's Conservative Review and Glenn Beck's The Blaze have merged and into a media conglomerate. And I suspect, you know, Blaze is Blaze TV. Blaze has a wider network, but Conservative Review has is more grounded in policy, is more equipped to advise and give policy. Glenn Beck is more, and it's not a merger between Mark Levin and Glenn Beck. It's their media outlets, just to be very clear. But anyway, they're going to be doing more and more. So that's one possibility. One America News is another possibility, and also Newsmax Television. So I'm just telling you, there are alternatives right now. They don't have the money, and they're yet to be as flashy, but they do deliver some good news, and you'll see some of the hosts that you've missed. You wondered where they went. They'll be on those outlets. So you might want to start exploring so that if something happens to Fox, you're not really caught without any kind of a backup. So we heard yesterday that Devin Nunes is suing Twitter. He's suing them for $250 million in compensatory damages and $350,000 in punitive damages. He says that they are shadow banning conservatives, secretly hiding their posts. In other words, you post something and then nobody sees it, but you don't know that. That's what shadow banning is. And then he says also that they're systematically censoring opposing viewpoints, totally ignoring lawful complaints. They've actually banned him. They have allowed the creation of fake accounts to go after Devin Nunes and turn the other way when these accounts were vile and did some real horrible things to Devin Nunes. Of course, the reason is because Devin Nunes led the charge. He's not done yet. Opposing the Russia investigation and trying to get out the information about what the deep state was actually doing. And so they came after him with a vengeance, and they still are. The complaint alleges that one account called Devin Nunes' mom stated that Nunes had turned out worse than Jacob Wohl. I don't know who Jacob Wohl is. Maybe you do. Falsely accused Nunes of being a racist, having white supremacist friends. Now, this is supposed to be coming from his mom. And distributing disturbing inflammatory racial propaganda, falsely accused Nunes of putting up a fake news MAGA sign outside of a Texas Holocaust museum, falsely stated that Nunes would probably join the Proud Boys if it weren't for that unfortunate, I can't read that, blank rule, disparagingly calling him a presidential, I can't read that either. So this is, but Twitter allows it, has allowed that, and yet they've taken Devin Nunes, his account down. So, and that's just, I'm making it very shallow. There's a whole lot more to this. So Devin Nunes is taking up the fight. By the way, Facebook has just blocked President Trump's social media chief, who is Dan Scavino. His Facebook page was blocked without notice about a comment that he made to someone, someone who posted on his Facebook, and he commented on it. It was very innocuous, and they took him off Facebook. This is very dangerous, ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to free speech. And we're going to have to do something about it. Some people are. Let's just stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.